Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the How's My Hand Path podcast. This week on the show, we have one of my oldest Instagram friends who I've gotten to know over the last 4 or 5 years. He also happens to be the guy who created the online platform that I use for my digital coaching by the name of Baden. So he's the founder of Skillist. Skillist is the app that we use for the ability to be able to help everybody around the world with their golf games. So this was a great interview. My brother is the one who actually did the majority of the interviewing of the episode itself. I kind of hopped in and out because I was in the middle of coaching at the same time, so unfortunately I couldn't be part of the whole thing, but it was a great episode, and my brother did a wonderful job, so here you go.
All right, Baden, I guess we're just going to start talking. No intro here because we'll do that at the start of the pod. How's life in Australia?
Things are great, mate. I mean, obviously, it's an incredibly bizarre time. So here in Australia, we're under lockdown as well. But it looks like the government's got things under control at the moment. So we're, we're very, very much flattening the curve here, which is good. We're very lucky in that we have our island nation and these natural borders, so we can sort of control the virus. But besides that, it's just getting used to this new world and how Skillist and you guys fit into it.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the platform in the later stages of this, but are the golf courses still open right now?
No, well, where I am, they're not. They're not. So they closed probably about three weeks ago, and yeah, they're absolutely not open, and it doesn't look like they're going to open for another month or something like that, it looks like. So I think in New South Wales, which is I'm from Melbourne, down the bottom of Australia, New South Wales, which is where Sydney is, they are actually playing golf, which is amazing. So it varies from state to state, but yeah, you can imagine that everyone's very keen to get back out there.
I think it's very similar to what we're dealing here in North America, because obviously the weather wasn't really permitting us to open the golf courses. I think they would have just probably started opening right around this time of the year, right around usually mid-April is when you start to see them open up, especially because the weather has been good here the last couple of weeks. But there's a lot of places in the U.S. that are open, and then there's a handful of my mini tour guys who can't practice because their places are closed. So I think it's kind of a crapshoot of where you are and how bad the virus is that's allowing it or not.
That's exactly right, yeah. And then I think it comes down to the local governor and what they feel like doing and things like that. But it's, it must be so hard. We're sort of lucky in Australia, obviously, where it's relatively an all year round golf season, really. So, but for you, where you're sitting inside for 6 or 7 months of the year to then be told you're not allowed to go out, that must be incredibly difficult.
Yeah, unfortunately, this virus situation kind of happened right around the start of our golf season, so we have to put that on the back burner. Obviously, there's much more important things in this world, so we're not really complaining too much about it. I mean, we're all healthy here, which is far more important, but it definitely sucks to not be able to get outside and start playing.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, it's a beautiful day here, so it's one of those days that reminds you want to get out there.
Sweet, dude. So let's talk a little bit about your backstory. I would love to know, outside of the platform, which Brandon will get into, I would love to know just how you got your start in the game of golf. Were you a junior who kind of played a lot growing up, or you kind of picked it up later on?
Yeah, I think similar to you, potentially, Shaheen, I took it up maybe a little bit later. So I'm just sports crazy, absolutely love my sport, whether it be skiing or cricket here in Australia is really, really a massive sport, and I was absolutely obsessed with it. Australian rules football, whatever it was, I was just absolutely obsessed with sport, cricket being my number one sport. And I played it at a relatively high level, and I was just always obsessed with technique and understanding best practices and how to get really, really good at something. I used to love watching, a skier come down a mountain and be able to, and then try and emulate them, and the same way with my bowling action in cricket sort of thing. So it started out really in other sports, but then by the time I sort of turned 17, I actually had really bad stress fractures in my spine from cricket. So I don't know how much cricket you've actually watched, but the bowling delivery, which is like what the pitcher does, is incredibly violent on the body, especially a 16 and 17 year old who didn't have any meat on his bones. And I kept getting really severe stress fractures in my lower spine. And I effectively got to a point where I couldn't really play as much as I wanted. This is cricket. I'd spend sort of 6 months of the year in a back brace trying to get my back right for the next cricket season. And golf started to sort of come onto my radar and seemed quite appealing. And I just remember that after going to my first golf lesson when I was about sort of 16 or 17, I just had that moment where I realised that this is not so much playing, but having that experience with the golf coach was the thing that made me realise that coaching and teaching was the thing that I wanted to do for the rest of my life. And I think that golf in particular, it just lends itself to that teaching environment so much because it's such a controlled environment and you can really train. And I was able to become really quite good really quite quickly because I had good instruction and could train in that controlled environment. But it was those early years of working with a good coach that just made me realize, wow, I want to be a teaching pro even before I wanted to be a playing pro. So I played in, you know, amateur events obviously, but it was pretty much just I was just absolutely laser focused on understanding how to help people get better at the game. So I did play, but pretty much from the age of 16 to 21, I was playing and playing in some amateur events and things like that. But by the time I was 21, I'd moved to Queensland, which is a northern state in Australia, to go and work with a coach and literally just shadowed this coach for the next 5 years as I trained to get good at teaching.
That's one of the questions I actually was meaning to ask you was, who was your swing coach growing up? Did you have a mentor? You know, what are some of the important or key things that you picked up from this coach that you kind of applied to your own instruction?
Yeah, well, I mean, hugely influential. So the coach that I worked with, his name was Gary Edwin, and Gary still is like an incredibly prolific golf coach. He's now 70. God, he'd be 75 or something like that. So when I was working with him, he was about 60 sort of thing. And Gary is, his stable of players has won about $80 million globally on tour, whether it be on the European tour or the US tour. He coached Peter Lonnard, Rod Pampling, Michael Campbell, Paul Gow, a whole bunch of tour players. And the cool thing about it was that they were all players. He created all these players effectively. They were just these, you know, sort of a bunch of Aussie touring pros who he took their technique and just refined it down and literally took them from being, you know, trainee apprentice professionals to elite players on the US tour and winning on the US tour. And it was because he just had such an amazing understanding of the golf swing. And it was really working with him that made me realize you can get really, really good at this game even when you don't have immense amount of early talent, but you can get really, really good if you've got technical proficiency. I just became so acutely aware of that early on. And, you know, maybe to my detriment a little bit at times, I've definitely been a little bit too technical with the way that I think about the game, because I could just see that if you can get cause and effect right and get people's bodies working the right way, the ball just seems to come out the right way. Now, obviously, there's a whole lot of extra influences in the game of, you know, obviously mental game and how you navigate your way around the golf course and things like that. But, you know, I've always had this fundamental belief that, you know, confidence comes from the ability to execute. And if you can build something, and when I say something, I mean your golf swing, that is repeatable and it feels like it executes, then confidence comes from that. It's kind of, I've always found it hard to build it the other way around, where you just talk yourself into being a better golfer. Even though I believe that, you know, the mental side of the game is so incredibly important, I've always sort of worked from the opposite end of the spectrum, where build technical proficiency and you can then build on your confidence from there.
Yeah, so there's a couple of comments I wanted to make about that answer because I liked that a lot. First of all, I mean, the coach you had as a mentor, you're talking about a guy who had Peter Lonnard, who was on the President's Cup team, and Michael Campbell, who won a major. So this is obviously no joke. This guy knows what he's talking about. That's a hell of a stable he had there of Australians. In terms of your answer, it's funny because the number one question I get asked a lot from people about my teaching instruction is like, what's the difference between technique, like a technical advantage or whatever, versus skill? And to me, it's like the guy who can overcome technical deficiencies is obviously very skilled. That's how I see it. So like you'll see a lot of players on the PGA Tour with technical flaws, but they're just so damn skilled that they can overcome that. But then your everyday golfer who doesn't play as often, isn't as coordinated, doesn't have as good hand-eye coordination and all that stuff, well, they don't have that skill. So they need something to get them going in the right direction. And what they need is less technical flaws, right? They need to have technical proficiency like you just kind of established. And that's kind of one of the things that I'm a big believer in as well. Kind of like you said, you know, this whole idea of cause and effect, like you can take a guy who didn't really play sports growing up, wasn't that great, and picks up golf in the later stages of his career, and you can get his technical game at such a refined shape that no matter how skilled he was growing up, no matter how athletic he is, he can overcome all that and actually play some really good golf. And so the fact that we kind of share that mindset, I think, is really cool.
Definitely. And I think that, you know, just really briefly talking about skills, but that I think is why obviously you've been so successful on our platform. And it's the thing that, because obviously when you're a coach, you probably are categorized, whether you are a tour coach or whether you're, you know, average, everyday Joe sort of golf coach. And I've always been more attracted to the everyday Joe sort of golf, being that sort of a golf coach, because they probably have less skill, as you were just describing. So at the elite level, you can probably coach the average player. I mean, you can probably tell them the wrong thing sometimes, you know, or something that isn't quite right, and they can still match it up. They can still fix, you know, the faults that are going on. As one of my mates used to say, you can do the magic dance on the way down and fix all of the faults. You know, but the average player just doesn't have that level of skill or the ability to make the compensations, which means that they have to have that technical proficiency and repeatability in their golf swing, which is so much more exciting to impart to people, I find. And I think at the elite level, I've taught touring pros and it is fantastic and it's good to see success and stuff like that. But personally, and I don't know if you're the same because I know you teach, you know, the full gambit. You do probably, you know, 25 markers, and then you're obviously teaching people at the absolute elite level of the game. But I would imagine you probably get more enjoyment out of taking someone from 12 down to 4 than you do someone at the absolute elite level.
Yeah, so first of all, that person you're talking about is my brother who produces the show, who when I first started entering business with him was probably about a 20 to 25 handicap. And
welcome.
Yeah, and also I should tell you, you're welcome. you know, I've probably taken him down to a mid-single digit now. Like his game has remarkably changed, and seeing his appreciation for the game and taking an interest in how things work about the golf swing, I think is really cool. Now, to your point, you know, I have spoken to a lot of tour players. I've been very fortunate to work with a lot of them. You would be amazed to see how much wrong information these players are told and what they actually think about. And it's so false, but they're so damn skilled, to your point, that they overcome it. And they don't even, half of the time, they don't even realize it. And yeah. I'm not gonna name names, but there are a lot of guys I've spoken to where I'm like, man, you don't know a thing about the golf swing. You don't understand this or that. Your information is incredibly false, and there's science to prove that it's false. And yet you're a top 25 player in the world. It's like, okay, well, this guy clearly just can overcome any sort of bad information possible. Whereas clearly your 20 handicap will comes to you and he's saying he's trying to keep his head down and he's still slicing it. You know, he's got to figure out a different way to start approaching the game because he can't overcome it with any level of skill.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I don't know. This is going to sound really controversial, probably. But have you? I don't know if you've seen recently, like TaylorMade are doing some awesome content where they sit down or they speak to all the tour players, and the tour players are talking about the different shots that they're hitting all the time. And Jason Day, I think, is really good in those things because Jason's really inquisitive. You can see he's really trying to figure things out. But even when he asks, and this is going to sound controversial, but even when he asks Tiger, like, how he does things, I honestly don't think Tiger knows 100% how he does things most of the time. You can see that when the question is asked to him, he has to think about it for 2 seconds. It's not something that is super deliberate or something that he's really, really conscious of. Like at the elite level, like you can hear all the time, you hear elite golfers try and talk about technique and they just don't know how to articulate it because they've never had to think about it.
Yeah, I think Tiger kind of falls into that category. You know, I've heard Tiger say some things that I think are in line with you know, the science of the golf swing and the biomechanics and all that. But I think that Tiger is absolutely terrible, to be honest, at articulating what he's feeling. And I think that I don't know if his biomechanics knowledge is super poor. I don't think it's super great either, to be completely honest. I don't think it's as bad as maybe it looks, but I do believe he's terrible at articulating the kind of things he's feeling and seeing. Because, you know, I mean, obviously I don't want to sound cliche to say like feel isn't real, but at the same time, when you're talking about a tour player of that level, you would assume that he has the understanding of what the real is. And I might get slammed for saying that, but I do not believe Tiger talks about the golf swing very well, to be honest. Oftentimes I kind of cringe when I hear him talk about it. And I do believe that he is describing much more what he's feeling and much less what's actually happening. Not always. Sometimes they do match up, but I've seen more than a fair share of explanations from Tiger that I wasn't too impressed with.
Yeah, I agree. And it's not his job either, is it, Shaheen? Like, his job is to just go out there and execute, you know, with his genius. So I think there's definitely, and I've seen it with tour players and people that are trying to get onto it, when they do have a really deep understanding of their golf swing and they're highly technical, that's also really harmful, isn't it? Because they often overthink things. They're out there, you know, watching their ball flights, thinking, you know, too internally, and they're not thinking externally enough. I know that, like, I used to work in an academy where I always make the comparison between, there were two tour players. One guy, his name was Scott Gardner, who Scotty was, he's now in Arkansas and teaching, but Scott played on the US tour for years. The most incredible ball striker I've ever seen. He was just unbelievable what he could do with the ball. And he used to just get his instructions from Gary, the instructor that I worked with, and he'd just go and execute. He wouldn't think about anything else. And then there was another guy down there who was almost as good a player as he was, Scott was. And he would walk around and ask everyone what they're working on. What are you working on? And what are you working on? And what are you working on? And he'd always be thinking and interpreting and wondering, should I be doing a bit more of that and a bit more of that? And unfortunately, his career didn't quite go anywhere. So there is, you know, there is that balance, isn't there? It's like, it's definitely not Tiger's job to be able to articulate things and explain things. Just leave it up to his genius. And then it's more down to people like yourself, Shaheen, who know it inside out to be able to explain it to people and then get players playing well with it.
I mean, I can provide several examples on tour. You know, Rory is one of those guys who maybe doesn't articulate it as well as a coach does, but I think he's extremely smart about the golf swing. I've heard him talk about it. He definitely knows what's going on with his movement pattern. And I think his understanding of the biomechanics is stronger than most tour players. I'm talking about Rory. But then you have the opposite end of the spectrum where you listen to a guy like DJ and he has no clue what's going on. I mean, this is a guy who clearly is one of the most skilled golfers on the planet, arguably the most skilled, right? But has absolutely no understanding of the biomechanics. He just sees the ball, wants to hit it, and through the intent of what he's trying to do, manipulates the club in a way that gets him to replicate the shot that he's imagining. Right. But if you ask him about, you know, the mechanics of a shaft movement doing this and his hand path doing that, I guarantee you his understanding of it is going to be very poor. But it's like you kind of said, it's not his job to know it. His job is to score well. It's his coach's job to know what's going on, which obviously Alan Terrell, who is his coach, does a very good job of doing. And I've spoken to Alan. He knows what's going on with the golf swing.
Yeah. I mean, there's part of me that is incredibly envious of, you know, obviously of DJ's golf game, but like, there's no doubt that for me and my game, when I go out there, like, I have over the years not been able to play unless I have two or three, you know, genuine swing thoughts. Like, that's how I play the game, and I cannot go out there and just let it all go. It's just never been a way I can go about things, and it probably has been detrimental to my game, but it's been beneficial to everyone else's game around me, hopefully, that comes in contact with me, because I can impart the knowledge, they can just go and apply it how they want. But for my game, it probably hasn't been the best. I don't know about you, Shaheen.
Well, I'll let Brandon speak to that, because he's seen me play more than enough times, and I guarantee you what he's about to tell you is that there is I don't think I've ever played a single round of golf without having at least two feels I'm working on at that present day. Literally not one round in my lifetime.
Yeah, I could say that Shaheen's swing has to be the most evolutionary swing I've seen. It just constantly changes. Not for the worse, obviously for the better. It just, he finds something he wants to work on, and then I'll see it during a few rounds of him working on it. So you'll have those two, three thoughts. You see him do his few feels during his swings, and yeah, like he said, it's just there's always a few things in his mind.
I to be honest, I can't go out there and play without feeling something. To me, it kind of seems like if I do that, I'm going to be swinging very loose. I'm not going to really have any sort of intent with my movement pattern, and it kind of just gets all out of sync. So, you know, I don't think necessarily every player is like that. Obviously, kind of like you've been, you know, we work with a wide range of skill levels. But I try to impart with all my tour players, especially, that, you know, going out there with one feel is very important. I don't think you should be going out there with nothing. You know, that feel could be minor, it could be major, it could be something static in the setup, but you should have something to focus on that you can rely on throughout the day and not deter or kind of go away from that just because of a poor shot.
Yeah, 100%. I agree. I definitely agree. But yeah.
The best players probably have a comfortable feel they rely on too.
Most players do.
Yeah, definitely.
I would agree with that. I mean, I've seen countless interviews of tour players outside of the ones that I've spoken to where every single time, you know, they say they get out of their own way, but that's such a, like a cliche phrase. To me, it's like, no, but you definitely didn't get out of your own way. I'm sure you were thinking about something. It could have been very minor. It could have been something like where your right hand is on the grip, but I'm sure these guys are thinking of what's going on the golf course.
Well, yeah, it does provide that little bit of security, I think. Like the last thing you want to be doing is, you know, standing on the 72nd hole in the middle of the fairway, needing to make par and then feeling like you've got nothing to refer back to or anything to rely on. So I think it's important for that reason.
Now, I don't know if Brandon wants to jump in on this, you know, now or later or earlier in the podcast or whatever, but there are a handful of coaches that I've seen on the internet that have a very, very large following. But I think that the information they provide isn't telling enough about their philosophies to merit getting a lot of online clients. And I don't want to shit on anyone, but you know, there's a lot of flashy videos you see from these guys on the internet where it's like, you know, you're gaining the attention of people who like to see what you're posting about. Yeah, you're curving the ball right to left around the tree. I get it. But are you posting something where somebody is going to look at that and say, you know, this guy definitely is going to understand where the mechanics are going wrong in my golf swing and be able to help me? Or are they just saying, that's a really cool shot that this guy just pulled off, and I want to watch that shot a couple more times on Instagram or whatever?
We were just speaking before the podcast about the webinar on Friday, which I think when this episode comes out will have already happened. But, you know, one thing I think that makes you, Shaheen, successful and us as a business is that, you know, you have an actual belief and philosophy of a swing, and you stand by it, and then you dive into it, into your content, and your content shows it, you know. And then you have other coaches online, like you said, that just kind of, you know, sprinkle a little spice of stuff onto their content of like, try this for this kind of little chip shot, or do this to get the ball higher, or do this to get a little bit more distance. But there's no philosophy behind their actual content. It's just, you know, little tips and tricks, but there's no meat to the actual information, which I don't think will lead to people following you in the long term and then investing in you as a coach, you know?
Yeah, I think a perfect example is Steve Giuliano. I know you watch Steve's content, but Steve had like really rapid growth with his Instagram a couple of years ago, and he got to about 50,000 followers literally within 2 years or something like that. And it's definitely stagnated a little bit, you know, for him over the past, say, 12 months in terms of his actual growth. And I was talking to him about it, and he said, well, I know what I can do if I just want to get, you know, these sort of cheap followers and you know, provide a little bit of entertainment and make things that look great. But I'm not going to do that because that isn't the type of follower that I want. I'm creating a brand here, and I'm creating a concept around the way I teach. And if I have that type of person following me, I'm not going to be able to teach them, and we're not going to be able to work together. So I think he's a perfect example of someone who's definitely resisted any sort of temptation to do that. And if you look at his stuff, it's just, I mean, you can never ever watch Steve's content and wonder what he teaches. He's just so detailed in everything he does.
Well, I think that's one of the things that me and Steve kind of align with a lot, and I'm sure we're going to get into this in the webinar too, which is, you know, Brandon kind of alluded to it to a small degree about the having meat on the bone kind of thing, you know, like having content that people can actually learn from instead of being flashy. But You know, I kind of would fall in the same line as Steve. I think our growth at the beginning on our social media channels was huge. I mean, we saw huge spikes at first. And, you know, we're still seeing consistent growth, but obviously it's not nearly to the level it was when we first started our pages. And yet we teach significantly more people now than we ever did before. And to be honest, every 3 months that goes by, we're even busier than the 3 months prior. Yet our growth on social media isn't as big. And I think it's because the content we put is so detailed and conceptual and you know, very clear cut that I think somebody who comes to our pages very much is going to understand and see what they're getting out of the lesson. If they come see me, they kind of know what to expect in advance, where, you know, there's really no debate about it. I mean, you come to my page, you see what I do. A lot of the things that I do obviously are very similar from one player to the next, not in terms of teaching a model, but in terms of having preferences. Yeah. And I think that, you know, having those clear cut, very detailed instructional content is what separates a guy like Steven and I from, you know, the crowd of people who are just building a following, but are not capitalizing financially on that following because the people are hesitant because they don't really know what they're going to get out of it.
And it's rare, like it's rare to find. Like we, obviously at Skills, we're always looking for, you know, the best and the brightest, and to be able to find coaches. And if you think about it, like there's 60,000 coaches around the world from, you know, the research that we've done all across the planet, and finding really, really articulate specific coaches is it's really, really rare. And I think that this is something that I absolutely love about social media and, you know, and getting into Skillist, is that students can now make a really, really discerning decision on who they learn from. So all the information's out there. They've got all the tools now to not only watch everything on Instagram, but they can use a platform like ours to interact with the best coaches around the world. And I think what it's going to do is it's going to raise all boats, because coaches are going to have to come along for the ride and really, really do their training, do their study, do their research, come up with these really clear-cut conceptual models around, you know, what they believe to be true. Because unless you can do that, because as I've said in the past, like in the future, whether it's us, and it will be us at Skillist initially, but in 5, 6, 10 years time, whatever it might be, there's going to be augmented reality, there's going to be virtual reality, whatever it is, where any student will be able to learn from any coach around the world. So at the moment, the thing that qualifies a coach for a student is the fact that they live 3 kilometers away from that student or that coach. Whereas, you know, in the coming years, that is going to be completely blown out of the water. You are, as a student, going to be able to learn from any coach around the world. So if you don't, as a coach, either have some sort of presence or some really clear concept of around the way you teach, you're not going to have any golf lessons.
I'll tell you what, Baden, I just spoke about this. I did an Instagram live with Andrew Rice over the course of this quarantine, and I spoke about Skillist and our platform and everything we do. You would be amazed to see the amount of coaches who had a wrench thrown into their whole situation and have literally no idea what to do financially to try to generate income, because it was so much in-person work. Yeah. That I'm getting messages on a daily basis from coaches saying, I want to learn this, I want to learn that, and this is the whole point of the webinar we're doing. It's like, these people have no clue how to generate any sort of income through the internet. And the fact that we've been able to grow this business out so big, and then with the unfortunate situation of the virus, where now it's like, this is the best time for us to be taking advantage of it, you know, it's incredible how many coaches are starting to fall into this category, that we're already 2 years ahead of the game because we've been doing this for so long, or 3 years, or however long it's been, you know?
I mean, it's quite like your business, like as ours, like we are very, very sad about the situation of people dying in the world. And it's a horrible situation to be taking advantage of. But in this situation where millions of people are losing their jobs, your business is growing. So I think that if you're out there as a coach and you don't have the tools to be able to leverage that, then as you say, you're 2 years behind the game, sort of thing. It's, but it's, I look at, for me, it's really exciting because it is great for the consumer. It's great for the student, right? Because there's no doubt that, like in all industries, you know, not all coaches are created equal. And the consumer at the moment is generally, or probably always, a victim of geography. So they arrive at a driving range that's, you know, 3 or 4 miles away from where they live. They ask if someone's available for a golf lesson. that person's probably available for a golf lesson for a reason because they're not that busy. That student goes in there and probably has a pretty horrible experience. Now that is about to completely change. So the students can, as I said, learn anytime, anywhere from the best in the world. And as we build out even more tools, that experience is going to get better and better. So I'm just excited for the consumer because I think we're going to get a lot better golfers out of it.
Amazing. Speaking of Skillist, actually, I wanted to kind of switch into a more tech conversation and ask you exactly when did Skillist like start? How did you start the company? What drove you to start the company and develop the app?
It almost literally, if I'm going to be completely honest, goes back to 2001, right?
Really?
So I'll be 40 at the end of the year in September. So I'm a bit older than I sound or act. And I've been learning or studying with this guy, Gary Edwin, that we spoke about earlier, literally for almost the last 20 years. Now, Gary, back in 2001, I was watching Gary do 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 online lessons a day back in 2001, 2002.
Really?
So he had, because he teaches such a specific way, right? So it's very, very specific the way Gary teaches. It's quite minimalistic and it's, very different to a lot of the stuff that's out there at the moment. But I could already see the power of it almost 20 years ago. I was like, this guy is teaching people across the planet. But back then it was literally send me an email in a gigantic file that would take forever to download. He'd then have to get it into V1. Then it would come out of V1, have to somehow get, you know, uploaded again to a mail account. And it was very, very difficult. It took forever. But I very early on saw the power of it there. So the thing that got me excited about that was not only the fact that a coach living on the Gold Coast in Australia could teach the world, but he could obviously do it in his own time from his lounge room or wherever he was. So I saw that as really quite exciting. But then as my career sort of built out, you know, I taught up there in Queensland, but then I moved to London. I taught in London. I then moved to Singapore and taught in Singapore. After Singapore, moved back to Australia. And it was just during all of that time that I realised that our industry was completely broken for all of the reasons that we've previously discussed. So not only, could coaches not make a huge amount of money unless they were in a really busy facility in a super busy city, but students were getting a really, really bad learning experience from what I had seen. Because you know what happens with the traditional in-person model is that someone comes down for a golf lesson, they've been waiting 4 weeks to get in, they come and see you, you give them their lesson. Especially back in the day, people wouldn't even send them home with any videos or any sort of content that they could reflect upon. They would then go away for 4 weeks. They'd try and chip away at it. They'd misinterpret something completely. They'd forget another thing. Then they come back to see you 4 weeks later and you're like, okay, so what's been happening for the last 4 weeks? And they completely completely done it the wrong way and potentially integrated the exact opposite thing of what you were trying to get them to do. So that model has just been broken forever. And I just got a little bit sick of, you know, students coming in, seeing that they hadn't changed it, seeing that, you know, they'd misinterpreted something. And so, yeah, so it was probably about 5 years ago, I was also at the end of an incredibly busy period teaching in person at my academy. And I remember giving my last lesson just before a 1 week holiday and thinking, if I have to do one more lesson, I'm literally going to go insane because of how much energy it takes. And like at that stage, I was doing 2 days a week, I was doing like up to 17 lessons a day. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, I'd start at 9 a.m. in the morning and finish at 9 p.m. at night. And
you remind me of a coach that we know.
Yeah. And it was that I just literally had this moment where all of those things that I've just talked about sort of came together where I'm like, we've got to solve all these problems. We've got to give students access to the best coaching around the world. And then we've got to give them all these tools where they can interact with their coach more often than every 4 weeks. Because the thing is, as you are fully aware, is that when someone comes for a golf lesson, they spend an hour with you and then they disappear, they don't need to be back the next day or even 2 days later for another hour. They just need to be able to say to you, hey, am I working on the right stuff? Is this what you wanted me to do? And it's a 2-second checkup. It's not like this elaborate you know, 20, 30 minute analysis that needs to happen. And that thing has just been missing from, you know, the learning process forever, effectively. So that is a bit of a long-winded sort of spiel of how it all happened. It was the origination of watching my original coach do it back in 2001 and thinking, wow, that's magic, and then spending the next sort of 15 years teaching and seeing all of the broken bits of our industry and how I wanted to fix it.
Nice.
I think that if I can jump in on this, because obviously I've experienced like Baden teaching a lot in person. I think the person Brandon was referring to was me, clearly, that used to teach from 8 in the morning to 9 p.m. every day on the golf course. Yeah. You know, unfortunately, the reality is when you coach in person, players are going to oftentimes come and go, right? So someone's going to come see you for a lesson, and if the person is not very serious, obviously this is not the case with the professionals we work with, but for the 20, 30 handicap weekend golfer who just wants to get rid of their slice, they come and see you. You know, they come and take a lesson. Okay, they feel somewhat good. By the end of the lesson, they're hitting it halfway decent. They're pretty happy with the progress. And they're like, okay, I'll come back and see you when I struggle. To me, this is such a flawed mindset. I don't know why I get this answer a lot. I don't know if this is the case with you, Baden, but a lot of these recreational golfers I work with, you know, they're like, oh, next time I'm struggling, I'll come take a lesson with you again. I'm like, well, you're bound to struggle if you're not coming and seeing me with some sort of regularity. Like, yeah, there's going to come a point in time where I can personally guarantee you will be struggling, and you're going to come back, and the odds of it being the same issue it was now is also pretty high. Mm. And these golfers take a lesson with me 4 months down the line. They come back and see me, and I'm like, but your swing hasn't changed in 4 months. Either you weren't working on it the right way and you weren't seeing the progress, so you gave up on it and you just caught in a vicious cycle where you never improve. Mm. Or what ends up happening is, you know, you worked on the wrong thing because the communication might not have been clear, or you weren't paying attention, or I didn't do a good job, or whatever the case might have been. Mm. And in that scenario, the golfer comes back and it's like they got better at one thing, but they got worse at two or three others. And you're like, well, dude, now you went the other extreme and now you're struggling with something else, and that's got to change. And so I think that, you know, one of the advantages of the monthly programs we offer on your platform, which I think is the way to go for most golfers, is the idea that, you know, you don't need to have a full analysis every single time you send in a lesson. I mean, these golfers who are working with me monthly, you know, the first analysis is obviously a very deep dive kind of informative, you know, video follow-up where it's like, look, this is what's going on from A to Z. This is what you need to do to get better. And then I send them the drills and all that. But then the follow-up videos could be literally just a quick checkup that takes me 2 seconds when I get a video sent in, right? And we get the notification straight to our phone where it's like, yeah, dude, you're working on the right thing, or no, you're not, and you got to do this slightly differently. But that quick follow-up that takes a couple minutes, I mean, that's like the game changer right there, right? That's the whole name of the game, where that's where a player continues to get better and doesn't veer off track and totally loses what they're working on.
It's just as important as the original lesson, isn't it? Like, you know, the follow-up to just ensure that everything's on track is why someone spends, in person, like, you know, expensive, you know, lessons can be $300, $400, whatever they are, depending on who you're seeing. That money is literally thrown down the toilet unless there is follow-up, because you've just got no way of knowing if the information you've just taken has been interpreted the right way and if you're executing the right way. So, yeah, that's just getting back to, yeah, the genesis of it. If we can solve that problem on its own, then we're halfway to making better golfers, I think.
Yeah. So speaking of now, like exactly what Shane was saying, like the monthly lessons and stuff, take for the listeners who maybe don't exactly know how everything functions, take me through the kind of user experience of what Skillist is.
Yeah, so what we are all about is connecting coaches and students from around the world, but it's all communication generally done with video analysis. So any student can, and especially now when you're stuck inside, you can have your net set up in your lounge room or in your backyard, and you can be videoing yourself and then uploading that to Shaheen. Now, Shaheen's profile has a bunch of content that you can watch in it, and you can sort of understand the way he coaches. And that sort of is how our platform is set up, is that we also, and this is something I haven't mentioned as much, is that, you know, I, because of the way my mentor coached, I was fundamentally and just, I was intrinsically aware that every coach taught completely differently. And we are You know, we're very swing agnostic on Skillus. We don't tell any coach how to teach. We would never do that. And we want students to be able to find a coach that can work with them. So when you come
to it, kind of creates a free market, I guess, right? Like there's no reason to force one philosophy. The idea is to find what you like and what works for you.
That's exactly right. You know, because we do know that everyone's body works slightly differently. The way they interpret information is different. The way one coach communicates the same message to slightly differently could be the difference. So we provide a platform where we guide you through, try and find a coach for you. But if you know that you're looking for Shaheen, we direct you straight to Shaheen, and then you can go into his profile, have a look at a little bit of content, and then effectively you can start messaging him straight away and have a conversation within the app. But then also upload video footage, subscribe to him. So you can either get individual online lessons, which is just a one-off where you upload one piece of footage, or you can upload as much footage as you want in one lesson, or you can subscribe, which is obviously what we're, and as Shaheen was talking about, we prefer, because it's a better learning experience where you can then get support throughout the month to ensure that you are working on things the right way. So that's pretty much how the platform is set up. And obviously we're working relentlessly at making it better all the time. And I think, you know, I can announce it here on your podcast, boys, that we're just about to launch the live experience, where we will have a live video chat integrated into the platform, so that as a follow-up, I think that, to use some technical terms, the online lesson structure that we currently have is called asynchronous, where you take video footage, upload it to Shaheen, and Shaheen will analyze it when he can get to it, or if he has time. And the synchronous component is going to be this live video chat, where you can potentially, depending on Shaheen's availability, book in for a time with him, and you can actually do things in real time. And the cool thing about that is that I've already noticed in trialing it is the student often doesn't even need to be hitting golf balls. It can be just a standing there with a wooden spoon and holding it in their lounge room or their kitchen and just saying, hey, this is how I'm trying to get my arm structure, or this is the direction I'm trying to turn. Is that right? So
that's funny. You answered the question before I even got to ask it, was what was in the pipeline for Skillus, but that sounds awesome. I mean, like you said, at some point there's going to be augmented reality, and this is just one step towards that.
Yeah, big time. Yeah. So, you know, if we can, and the one thing that has been probably lacking from the platform as well is that, probably that just that little personal touch or that personability, where when it is the asynchronous structure that it is at the moment, you never actually have that conversation with a student. It's always like, you obviously you're analysing the footage and you're talking over the top of it, and the student gets to hear your voice and you then describe it, you turn the camera on yourself and you're doing your drills and explaining things. But I think that being able to talk to that student in real time is just going to create a really cool personal bond between the two of you, and it's just going to help solve a couple of the communication problems, which is going to be really, really exciting.
Yeah, it's funny. We spoke with the CEO of Whole 19, Anthony, and some of the ideas he had that kind of seem like there's potential for Skillus and for Whole 19 to kind of do some great things together in regards to kind of like integrating information and that collaborative synergy between the two companies to kind of get coaching to the next level, you know?
Well, I mean, it'd be definitely cool. I mean, Anthony is just a fantastic guy. I've known Anthony for a few years now, and he's built an amazing platform in Whole 19, and he's a great operator. And I think that, I mean, it does make a lot of sense, doesn't it? Is if you can imagine, I think you've used the platform as well, but when, you know, I've used it in the past, it is kind of cool when you can look back at your round and you can actually see a GPS tracking of the way you've navigated the golf course. Like, something like that is pretty cool. Imagine having a student using a platform like Whole 19. They send not only their video footage of themselves,
but then their round data straight to their coach.
Their round data, and you can actually look at the map above the golf course that they play and watch them navigate themselves around the golf course.
Yeah.
It could be really, really interesting. So, yeah, Anthony is, he's a great man. We're always in chats.
Yeah, it was fun talking about it and seeing kind of like the sparkle in his, not his eyes, but I guess like the twinkle in his voice of like what's exciting and what's potential. So,
yeah, no, he's amazing. He's been going at what he's doing for 10 years as well.
Now. Yeah.
He's just a great operator.
Yeah. So one of the last questions I wanted to ask you is you started writing for golf.com.
Yes.
And dude, how do you balance coaching, running a tech company, and then writing for a major golf publication? Like, do you ever see your wife or?
Yeah, it's intense. It's definitely intense.
How did that start?
With golf.com?
Yeah.
How did it start? It's actually interesting. So Anthony, that we were just talking about, totally coincidentally, he asked me to do a presentation. When was that? Not this year, but the year before at the PGA show over in Orlando. He asked me to do a presentation for Casio because they were doing an integration with Casio watches. And I got up and I did a presentation there. And one of the journalists, Dylan DeChair at golf.com, who's an amazing journalist, you should check out what he's doing at golf.com. He came up to me and said, I've heard about your platform. You should speak to our head of instruction, Luke Kerr Denain. So I followed that up. And then before we knew it, not only are we sort of doing a little bit of an integration with Skillus, but he asked me to write as well. So I've got my weekly article there. This one will be coming out probably in the next 24 hours, which will be about Bryson DeChambeau, who the other day, did you see him on Twitch going crazy and generating 203 miles clubhead ball speed?
The scientist.
So, I mean, I really like Bryson. I think he's really, really cool. So
definitely unique.
Yeah, definitely unique. But my last article was actually on Shaheen. So I've got plenty of great topics to talk about.
Awesome. All right, dude. Well, I guess the last question I'm going to ask you, which I think Shaheen was going to ask you, but I'll just ask it anyways, who's playing in your dream foursome?
Oh, wow. That is really interesting.
I'm expecting three Australians as the answer.
I'm not that parochial, am I? I probably am. But you've got to, it's so boring, but you've got to play with Tiger. You just got to play with Tiger just so that you can say you've seen the ball flight. I mean, it's probably relatively boring in terms of, like, I would have loved to have played with, there's probably two guys if I interchange them in and out, like Peter Thompson, like, who I don't know if you guys know, but like one of Australia's most famous golfers, Peter.
Five Open Championships, no?
Exactly. Won five Open Championships. Didn't play that much in America, but was just an absolute icon here in Australia. And the way he swung a golf club was actually incredibly influential on the way that my mentor teaches. So there was sort of like, he based everything on three players he loved were Ben Hogan, Kel Nagel, who you would never have probably heard of. It was just this incredible Australian golfer, and Peter Thompson, because they all had these relatively small, efficient golf swing sort of thing, especially once Hogan had his car accident and couldn't move anymore. But, so it'd probably be Tiger. Let's make it those four, and I'll be a fifth carrying a bag or something. It'd be Tiger, Kel Nagel, Peter Thompson, and Ben Hogan.
Nice, man.
I have to say one thing here before we end, because I think it's a really funny story. Is the first time that me and Baden officially met in person, and the funny restaurant that we went to, if you remember, Baden.
Of course.
So Baden and I are messaging each other for the PGA show, probably back in, what, 2017 or 18 or something like that?
2018, I think it would have been, yeah.
Yeah, and I was using his platform for maybe like 4 or 5 months. We were just starting out, and Baden's like, we're going to be at the PGA show, let's meet up and whatever. So I'm looking at the restaurants in the area and I'm like, okay, let's find a restaurant to go eat at. And for whatever reason, I completely like kind of blacked out when I thought of the closest restaurant to the PGA show is Outback Steakhouse. And Baden is Australian. So this is like the cheesiest, corniest possible restaurant you could probably take an Australian to, this like franchise place that probably tastes nothing like authentic Australian food. And I'm like, Baden, you want to meet at Outback Steakhouse? And he's like, yeah, sure, no problem, whatever. So we meet up, we start having a beer, and then just like at some point, like 15 minutes into the conversation, he goes, pretty interesting choice of restaurant you picked there, Shaheen. And I'm like, man, and then I put two and two together, and you should have seen my face just drop like of embarrassment. I cannot believe that I took the Australian to fucking Outback Steakhouse without realizing what I was doing. Like, it was just completely a mind went blank on that one.
It was good. It was good kangaroo that we ate, though, wasn't it, mate?
Yeah. Oh man.
Exactly right.
All right, dude. Well, honestly, Baden, thank you for coming on and sharing some of your wisdom and for your time.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks, guys. And it's just wonderful to have you involved in the platform. You've been just such a key part to it, constantly growing and expanding. And the feedback that both of you give me is just invaluable to the app and the platform getting better and better every single day. So I can't thank you enough for being involved in it to this point.
Oh, anything, dude. We love it. I'm sure a lot of other coaches do as well.
Yes, sir.
Thanks, team.
All right, guys.
So that was the interview with my dude, Baden. Just some important comments here for everybody who's been tuning in. We release our podcast info every week on our social media channels, predominantly on Instagram, on my academy page, which is Nak Giovanni Golf, my last name in golf. So what we're going to start doing every week, because we appreciate everybody who's been tuning in, is we're going to start picking a lucky winner on a weekly basis and giving away a bunch of merch from our academy. So caps, t-shirts, golf balls, whatever. And so we'll pick somebody who shares it to their feed and to their Instagram story every week. And at the same time, we'll give you guys some nice podcast shout outs and things like that, because, you know, we really appreciate the fact that everyone's been listening in, and we get comments on a weekly basis from people saying that they love the insight from the tour players or coaches or whatever. So just a little love from our side, and we hope you guys enjoy the next episode.